Good afternoon. Everybody was out late last night. Hope you're having a nice Sabbath, a restful Sabbath in preparation for this evening and the holy days coming forward. If we can go ahead and bring up the presentation, I wanted to continue the topic that we started last time on the Sabbath. And I want to tie it into the holy days as well, because I think there's a theme here to think about as we think about the Sabbath and the keeping of the Sabbath, how we view it contextually, how we think about it, how we evaluate how we keep it in our lives. If we can go to the next slide. As we start here, what I'd like to do is recap a little bit from the previous message, just to kind of bring a little remembrance. So one of the things that I'm trying to do in this series of three messages is create a framework to think about the Sabbath. And the last message revolved around developing three themes that we find that help us create a framework to think about the Sabbath. And then we spent time looking predominantly the Old Testament, and how to think about these themes and how God, through the Bible, brings these themes to life. First theme was that of divine order. And as we think about God, and as we think about the Passover last night and the holy day plan, it reminds us that God fundamentally is the God of life. And he establishes order. And his order is focused on producing life. We see this from the very beginning, at least the beginning of the creation. When we look at Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 1 and chapter 2, we see that God set an order in place that produces life, and a part of that order was the Sabbath day. And the purpose of the Sabbath day, we went into a little bit of little Hebrew, but the purpose of the Sabbath day is to refresh. Remember, there is a connection between the term refreshed and the term that's used to refer to man. It's a time to refresh humankind, to refill them, to recharge them, where they can come into God's presence and have that connection and be refilled, be refreshed. We looked at the context of Genesis, and in the first couple of verses there, in Genesis 1, the earth was in chaos, tohu and bohu. It was without form and was void, and it wasn't in a state to produce life. And through the rest of chapter 1, God implements order that is designed to produce life. Then we get to chapter 2, where we get to the Sabbath, and he completes his creation with the creation of the Sabbath. So in the first 6 days, he was establishing the physical creation to produce life. And on the seventh day, he established the Sabbath day for spiritual life, for connection to him. The second major theme that we reviewed was that of alignment. And that, or this idea that aligning to his way of life, aligning to his order, ultimately produces life. And when each one of us are called, as we have been, we have the opportunity to choose. To choose to align to his way of life. To choose to observe the Sabbath. God won't force a human being to align to his way of life. It's a choice. But by the same token, not aligning to his way of life leads back to a state of disorder or chaos that cannot support life. We'll see that a little bit more as we go through the sermon today. Then the third major theme we looked at was that of relationship. You know, oftentimes the Sabbath is looked at from the context of the old covenant, And people often think that because the Sabbath was included in the Old Covenant, when the Old Covenant was replaced with the New Covenant, the Sabbath was no longer kept. But the Sabbath existed before the Old Covenant was made with Israel. And so what we find is there is a relationship involved. And when God establishes a relationship with an individual or with a people, he gives them a gift. He gives them a gift of a covenant of the Sabbath. And we saw that in Exodus 31. And then that is a part of that relationship helps the people remain refreshed, to be refilled, rejuvenated, reconnected with him. That's the first part of that. And so the first part of the message, we kind of created that framework. We went into some of the scriptures. We looked a little bit of the Hebrew. And then kind of built that up a little bit. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to start to create a bridge to the New Testament. And we're going to ask the question, do we see these same themes? One of the things that you find with a lot of scholars and a lot of people that look at the New Testament, one of the reasons that they would propose that the Sabbath is done away is because you don't find the specific command, thou shalt keep the Sabbath, in the New Testament. But the question is, do we see God's intent for his divine order, including the Sabbath, in the New Testament? Do we see that? Now, obviously, we're here today. We're a new covenant people, so obviously we believe that. But I want to go into a little bit more detail today and show and kind of bring that to life, because there is a few scriptures we will look at that show that in a very pronounced way. But I also want to look at the Sabbath, and in particular, breaking the Sabbath from God's perspective. What does he think about it? He gives this precious gift to his people. He establishes a relationship with them. He allows them to understand his way of life, his order. We refer to his order in a lot of different ways. We can refer it to someone who walks with God. We can refer to it as his law, his way of life. But he gives that. So how does he feel when his Sabbath is rejected, when his order is rejected? So we'll spend a little bit of time with that, and then we'll go into the New Testament. If we can go to the next slide. So as we look at how God feels, we're going to evaluate that from the perspective of Nehemiah and Jeremiah. We'll spend a little bit of time here starting in Nehemiah, and then we'll touch base with Jeremiah. Now, just as a kind of as a fair warning, we're going to get a little bit deep. And so I'm just up front, I'm going to tell you, I have completely destroyed all the rules for making PowerPoint. They tell you don't use a lot of words, you know, use pictures. I'm going to use a lot of words today, and I'm not going to use any pictures. But I think it's important to understand some of the language that's used, because a lot of the times when we look at things in the English, we lose some of the texture. And God's theme of his divine order is communicated at times through the word choices that are used. And so we're going to explore a little bit of that today. So we'll start here in Nehemiah chapter 13, beginning in verse 15. So we read, in those days I saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in heaps of grain. So they were out working on the Sabbath. They weren't necessarily aligning to God's purpose for the Sabbath. They were out doing their own thing. Then in dropping down to verse 17, when I confronted the nobles of Judah and said to them, now we're going to evaluate a couple of these words, specifically profane and evil, because I think it's important to get an idea of what Nehemiah is communicating. How is he thinking about what he is saying to the Israelites. So remember, the topic here is the Sabbath. And they're breaking the Sabbath. And this is what he says. What is this evil thing that you are doing? Profaning the Sabbath day. Did not your fathers act this way? And did not our God bring all this disaster on us and the city? And now you are bringing more wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath. So let's spend a little bit of time thinking about the term profaning. So what's he communicating here, right? What's the idea? So profaning in the first part in verse 17, this term is referring to those who profane or those who defile. So it's referring to the individuals that are doing this. Now, when we find this word profane, when we look at the root, HLL, but when we find it in the peel stem, so I'll just put it there for your reference. The stems in Hebrew are used to create voices and different tenses that communicate different ideas. So when we find this term, HLL, that root word, in the peel stem, which we would find in Hillel, what it means to profane, to defile, or to make something common. But what's really interesting when we think about this term, profane, the root word has a very large semantic domain, meaning based on the tenses and the context in which the term is used, it can have a wide range of meanings. But because of that shared semantic domain, the core suggests that there is a link between this idea of profaning something and piercing or and the idea of piercing or violating something. So let me kind of reset that a little bit. So we have this word HLL, and it can mean to both profane, but it also has this idea of violating or piercing. Think violence. Something violently has happened. A sword has been taken and has pierced something. Some type of violence has taken place. And we see this term both in Isaiah 53, which we read last night. We probably read going up to the Passover. And we also see it in Ezekiel 28 and verse 9. So we have this idea that profaning, it's not just when the Sabbath is profaned, what Nehemiah is talking about, it's not just from God's perspective, oh, they decided to do their own thing. Oh, you guys wanted to worship me on a different day. Well, I don't know, maybe we have a little bit of a disagreement. That's not the way God views it. It's something more fundamental that's happened here from his perspective. There's more intensity with the language that's being used. If we can go to the next slide. And we're going to tie this idea of profaning a little bit more tightly, because when we look at Jeremiah, I think it helps bring it more to life so we can understand the intensity of it. The other word that I want to look at is this, is a term evil. Now, the term evil comes from the Hebrew ra, and it's generally translated evil or wicked. When we think about the biblical worldview, or more broadly, how is this term used? Ra is often used to refer to the opposite of God's way. So frequently in Scripture, and we'll touch base on a few examples that you can look at, it's used in contrast. So it will be good and evil, or good versus evil. And so we'll frequently see this term used. And so we think of What is Nehemiah communicating? What is he thinking as he's talking to the people? The Sabbath was a part of God's order to life. And he's saying the people were breaking, they were profaning, they were ignoring the Sabbath. And it was in contrast to God's order. I mean, we look in the Garden of Eden, we've known this as a people for a while, that there are two ways of life. There is God's way of life, and then there is everything else. There's not 50 ways of life, there are two. Right? There's God's way, God's order, and there's everything else. What Nehemiah is saying is, there's God's order, and you've left it, and you're selecting a different way. You're in conflict with what God wants. And we see it used in contrast, evil, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 17, where it refers to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that is Tob, which is good, and evil, which is Ra. So in the tree of good and evil, you have both ways mixed up, but both ways mixed up ultimately lead to death. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. It's either all in God's way, striving for that, or not. Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. This is interesting. You know, when God looked down right before the flood and he saw mankind, he saw the evil, he saw the raw of mankind. But that's contrasted with Noah. And what do we find Noah doing? Noah walked with God. He was aligned to God's order, to his way of life. Then in Jeremiah chapter 2, verses 17 through 9, here Jeremiah is communicating to Israel that God is going to bring punishment. And he's going to bring punishment because they have gone and they have left his way and they have aligned with other nations. They've gone to Assyria. They're aligning to a different way of a different way of life, and they're going to be punished for that. They're not aligned with God. But what's really interesting, when it talks about aligning this way of life, the terminology that Jeremiah uses, it says, therefore know and see that it is evil going away from God's order, apart from God's order, wrought, is evil, and bitter, which is this term, wamar, to forsake the Lord your God. So in that phrase that we find in Jeremiah chapter 2 and verse 17, this idea of evil and bitter actually emphasizes that from God's perspective, it is not just walking a different path, but when we start on that path and we pursue that path, God views it as intense hostility, and it injures the relationship. This is what God's telling Israel as they left his way of life, as they left his order. And this context is all around the Sabbath day. We see throughout the major and minor prophets, God tells the people, you have polluted my Sabbaths. This is how intensely God feels about his Sabbaths. And what was his purpose for the Sabbath? Was to create a space that was sanctified, that was appropriate for his presence, that he could bring his people into. We have the Holy Spirit. That we can come into the Sabbath and we can connect to him and we can be refilled and we can have life. It's a rejection of life. It's a rejection of his order. And he feels strongly about that. He wants people to choose life. Now, there's one phrase I'm going to ask you to keep in your mind, in the back of your mind here, because when we get to the New Testament, this comes into scope and it gives a little bit more light into what we're going to see here in a few minutes. But this phrase in verse 18, Did not your fathers act in this way, and did not our God bring all this disaster on us and on this city? So tuck that away in the back of your mind. We're going to get to that. But that's a really important point, especially as we get to the New Testament. Because Christ corrects the Pharisees on the way that they were keeping the Sabbath, the way that they were teaching the people to keep the Sabbath. And this statement comes back and is really important to understand when he does that. So let's go to the next slide. Let's build out God's thought process, the way he's communicating here through Jeremiah and Nehemiah. So let's focus on Jeremiah. And we'll start, I'm going to use the Lexham English Bible translation. I think it gives a little bit better feel here for what's being discussed. But in Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 22, we read, "They are foolish children." It's interesting. The ESV is a little bit more direct. The ESV translates it, "They are stupid children." The idea here, when we think about what's going on, is there's a complete lack of understanding. But they are foolish children, and they do not have insight. They are skillful at doing evil. Two ways of life, two orders. And the people had become very skilled at walking contrary to God's order, to his way of life, but do not know how to do good, how to do tov. So clearly, in Jeremiah's thought process, as he's thinking about the people and where they are and the judgment that's coming, they weren't discerning the two ways of life. They weren't discerning of God's order. So we see this lack of understanding. And again, what this whole idea of foolishness is really important here, because it is the inability or the lack of the ability to understand, have this moral or spiritual sense. The Sabbath day is a time for us to come and connect with our God and be refilled. They walked away from the Sabbath day. They were doing their own thing. And it led them to a place where they didn't have the sense to understand what order to choose. But what's really interesting, I'm going to go back to the last message, and I want us to think about Genesis chapter 1 here for a second. The beginning of Genesis chapter 1, what state do we find the earth? Yes, we find it in chaos, in a state that cannot support or produce life. God intervenes and establishes his order. What happens when his order is reestablished? Is established. It produces life. I mean, we get to the end of Genesis chapter 1, and we find that there's flora and fauna, and they have food, and God has put in self-sustaining processes. There's day and there's night, and there's land and there's water. It's not chaos. And then there's a spiritual time to connect with him spiritually to produce life. Then we get to verse 23 of Jeremiah 4, and it says, "I looked at the earth, and behold, it was a wasteland. It was tohu, and it was emptiness." So it's interesting when Jeremiah, and I think we could say the same thing for Nehemiah, but especially powerful when we put these two things together. Where does Jeremiah point back to? The original implementation of God's order. And when his order is ignored, or when we leave his order, it goes to a state of disorder. Into a state that cannot sustain and produce life. How does God think about his Sabbath? We can go to the next slide. I think if we look at this through the perspective of Jeremiah and Nehemiah and what God inspired them to write, I think there's a couple of statements that we could make. I think the first statement that we could make is that Sabbath breaking, from their perspective, is not a minor lapse, but it is a profound rupture in the covenant relationship, and it is a violation of divine order. So I know there are times when some would say, hey, you can choose which day you want to keep. You can define if you want to keep the whole thing, you want to keep part of it. No, really, it's up to you, right? You kind of figure out what works, and God will respect that. God has an order, and his order produces life. We have the opportunity to align to that order, the order that maintains and produces life, and we have that opportunity because we have a relationship with him. The other statement that I think is pretty clear, especially if we think about Jeremiah, is if the relationship, if that state is left unhealed, the decline, that rupture, leads not just to moral decline, but it reverses into disorder. It reverses into a state that is fundamentally opposed to God's order. But isn't that what John is getting to in 1 John? I mean, you think about the whole discussion that John goes into in 1 John about light and dark. That's the point that he's making. If you're aligned to the light, be aligned to the light. And if you're in the light, you can't be in the dark. There are two ways. There's God's order and there's everything else. And the Sabbath day is a fundamental part of that order. One other point that I would like to make. When we think about the Sabbath day, I find it interesting that Nehemiah made such a point about the Sabbath day. If you think about where the people were, they had just returned to the land a few chapters previously in Nehemiah. They had found the book of the law. They had kept the holy days. There was excitement. And this is a really powerful, poignant point for Nehemiah. So let's do this. So we've looked at Genesis and Exodus. We've kind of come forward after the people have been removed to the land. We've gotten God's perspective. Let's carry this bridge over into the New Testament a little bit then. If we can go to the next slide. I want to spend most of our time, most of the rest of the time we have remaining this afternoon in Mark chapter 2. As we find a really interesting interaction between Christ and the Pharisees. So set the scene here a little bit. The disciples are walking with Christ. The Pharisees see them walking through a field of grain, and they're a little bit hungry, so they're picking grain and they're eating it. And so then we start in verse 23 of Mark chapter 2. One Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, look what they're doing, what is not lawful on the Sabbath. It's a really interesting context, really interesting thought that they're communicating there. And so when we think about this, especially as Christ begins to address it, I think it's important to be clear on what the issue is. The issue is not about whether you should keep the Sabbath or not. And some will use this passage, and I think it's Matthew 12 as well. And they will use this passage and they will de-emphasize the importance of the Sabbath. Christ never said, the issue is not, should you keep the Sabbath or not? It's not a discussion of whether it's appropriate to keep the Sabbath. The question that the Pharisees proposed, or rather accused, is did the act of grain violate the Sabbath? And what we find with the Pharisees, in their zeal to protect the law, the Pharisees redefined not only how to keep the Sabbath and how to keep the law, but they transformed the purpose of the Sabbath. So from a Pharisaic perspective, and we're going to get to here in just a minute, I want to explain a little bit more, and I want to explain why they did this. Because they did it in their zeal. It's not like they were going around saying, oh, let's see how hard we can make the law on everybody. No, this was done out of zeal. And I want you to remember the statement from Nehemiah. They were zealous about the law, and they established a legalistic approach around the law and in the Sabbath, but they did it to protect it. They did it to protect the people from repeating the sins of their ancestors. We can go to the next slide. So when we look in the Mishnah, the Mishnah is a compilation of oral traditions. It was compiled in the about 200 current in the current area, about 200 AD. And so I took a quote out of the Mishnah. I think it's interesting to look at the quote because in Pirkei Avot 1:1 we read this. Moses received the Torah at Sinai and transmitted it to Joshua, and Joshua to the elders, and the elders to the prophets, and the prophets to the men of the great assembly. So you see this transmission of the law, and much of the law that he's referring to is the oral traditions. They said three things: be patient in the administration of justice, raise many disciples, and make a fence around the Torah. Their goal was to protect the law. Now, why would they protect the law? Because in Nehemiah, we know, did not your fathers act in this way? And did not our God bring all this disaster on us in the city? The Pharisees were looking at this and they were saying, we blew it in the past, people. We absolutely obliterated God's order, the way of life he gave us. And because we don't want to do that again, because we don't want to go back to the time that happened, and because we want the Messiah to come, and because we want him to usher in the time that's spoken about in the prophets, we will protect the law. We're going to put a hedge around it so we don't offend it, so we don't break it. They did it out of zeal. But unfortunately, over time, it became a hedge. And the hedge became the focus. So why were the Pharisees accusing the disciples of breaking the Sabbath? Because they were picking kernels of wheat. Because in the Mishnah, in the oral traditions, you're not allowed to harvest on the Sabbath. You're not allowed to winnow or separate the wheat and the chaff on the Sabbath. So from their perspective, the disciples were completely breaking it. They were violating it. They were taking Israel back to what had happened before, and the Pharisees were incensed. Incensed might be a little strong. Highly accusatory, probably a better term. But what's interesting, when we think about it from the Pharisees' perspective, what happened to them? So they were so focused on the hedge, they lost focus of what God's true order produces. Right? They became so focused on the things to break the law that they completely missed judgment, mercy, and faith, the heart of the law. We can go to the next slide. So what does Christ do? What does Jesus do when he's addressing them? You know, he doesn't go, oh, you dirty, rotten scoundrels. You know, I'm going to teach you all better. That's not what he does. Jesus completely reorients the discussion. And he reorients it to the purpose of the Sabbath, and why the Sabbath was created from the beginning. And in his discussion here, he takes the discussion all the way back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2, to the very beginning. His point is, you've missed the point. You don't understand the purpose of the Sabbath. You've missed the purpose of God's order. And go to the next slide. It's really interesting. The term made here, where we say, and he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. This term said the Sabbath was made for man. The term made means to become, to happen, to be made, to come into being. It means there was a point that it didn't exist and it came into existence. And it came into existence for humankind, for their benefit. And when we go back into Genesis, we see that's when it came into existence as a part of his order to produce life. The Sabbath didn't all of a sudden appear by chance. It wasn't Adam walking through the Garden of Eden or Noah later on just saying, maybe we'll do this. No, there was a specific purpose. But what's also really interesting, when we go to the Septuagint and we go back to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 3, we see this and through other verses in Genesis as well. It's the same Greek word in the Septuagint, same root. Christ is connecting back here. He's reorienting back to when God established his order for the creation. And it was established to produce life. The other interesting point here is in verse 28. When we think about the Greek construction of verse 28, when we read the term, when you look in the Greek and the tenses and how it is constructed, the phrase of the Sabbath implies that Christ has dominion over the Sabbath. He is the one that gets to define what the Sabbath is for. And he and the Father are one. So it's interesting. As Christ is talking to the Pharisees and the disciples are being accused, it's not about should we keep the Sabbath. It's not about who gets to adjust it. It's not about can I kind of adjust it and maybe I get to define when I'm going to keep the Sabbath or how long or what I should and shouldn't do. Christ tells the Pharisees, you missed the point. We've got to go back to the beginning. You have to understand why God established the Sabbath. You need to understand his divine order. You understand, we need to understand, why is it a part of his plan to produce, to maintain, to sustain life? And he's the one that gets to define the purpose of the Sabbath. Pretty powerful statement. So when we ask ourselves our question, right? Do we see the order that we saw in Genesis, that we saw in Exodus 31, that we saw in Jeremiah, that we see in Nehemiah? Do we see that same process, that same order? Do we see the same framework of divine order, of aligning to God's way of life and his purpose, of having a relationship? It could not come through more powerfully. And Christ was emphatic. So, question for us. Passover was last night. We've got two holy days, two high days coming up. Why talk about this now? All right, why talk about the Sabbath now? If we can go to the next slide, I'd like to leave you with two thoughts as we go into the holy days. As we're in the holy day season now, but as we celebrate tonight, we keep the holy day tomorrow. When we think about the Sabbath day, we are engaged in spiritual warfare. There is an order. There is a way of life that is in a battle with God. Now, we know who's win. We know who wins. God's not worried. He's not sweating it out. We can go to Revelation. There's absolutely no question. But that other way of life is not going to stop battling. Another other way of life is frequently, we see it in contrast, we see it compared to, we see it in conflict with God's way of life to produce. But when we look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5, Paul's pretty clear. For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ. Do we use the holy days as a powerful weapon in this war we are waging? I mean, think about God's order to life. That is the holy days. It's his plan of salvation. It's the order that he has created that clearly communicates that will, if we align to it, will produce life. So when we engage in the holy days, is that on our mind? Do we look to be fulfilled? Do we look to be rejuvenated? The purpose of the Sabbath is to refresh. That is clear in Exodus 31. That is why the Sabbath was established to begin with, so we can be refilled. Do we do that? I would suggest we take a little bit of time as we enter into these holy days, because this is the start of the plan. We can go to the next slide. Second thought that I would leave with you is the Sabbath is a boundary against cultural drift. When we look at both Nehemiah and Jeremiah, when people started breaking the Sabbath, it was a reflection of how Israel had drifted from their identity. Our identity should be one with our Father and his Son. You know, we read last night, we probably read multiple times coming up to the Passover. John 17, 20 verses 20 and 21, where Christ said, I do not, in his prayer, I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. There is unity. Our identity is in our Father. You know, it's interesting. When we go all the way to Revelation 3, one of the things that God promises, Christ promises to those who overcome, well, they will have God's name written on their forehead and be a pillar in the house of God. We are identified. We are unified with our Father. That is our identity. As we go into these holy days, do we rehearse that identity? We did last night, and we will through the next several days. But do we really stop on the holy days and think about that? Because that is an incredible boundary that helps us maintain who we are and maintain that understanding so that we don't end up in a situation where we drift. You know, with the upcoming holy days, it's a tremendous opportunity for us to take a step back and spend a little bit of time thinking, rehearsing, thinking about our Father's order, thinking about his purpose, thinking about where we are aligning, considering the relationship that we have. We've been given an incredible gift, a very precious gift. Let's remember.